Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
The December corn contract expired Wednesday of this week, and that allowed the weekly lead option chart to post a better than 17-cent gain in the corn market. We'll try to find out if it's as positive as it sounds today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Brian Hoops of Midwest Market Solutions out of Yankton, South Dakota. Our panelists today are Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Beans rallied nearly 27 cents for this week in the lead option chart. Corn was up almost 18 cents. Mind you, this is a week to week and reflects the expiring months. Still, it sure sounds positive. Dan, is it?
One's going to have to take a look at the charts, especially the soybean chart looks real intriguing, I think, especially the way the market was able to come back Friday and close firm after kind of a scary Wednesday, Thursday type decline. So soybean market looks real interesting, especially since it's right up against this $6 area. We were up here several times. We were up here in October, then early November, and now we're back up here again right at $6. So the way the market closed, it does look like it wants to give it a try anyway to see if it can trade above this $6 area. Corn, it looks also good, but I don't think you want to read too much into the lead futures contract by the expiration. But I do think what was important more than anything is that December corn was able to show firmness the last couple days of its expiration. So that really does solidify, I think, the 185 level as pretty good support level. And I think December corn had a high of something like 97 the day it expired. So the low twos, upper 190. These are going to be some pretty good support for March corn.
Dan Zwicker is with AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. And Mike Zuzulo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Is it as positive as it looks?
Yeah, Dan has a real good point there, and it was a good week. One thing we noticed at the end of the week, though, it seemed like the pit traders and some of the more institutional fund traders or, fund index following traders and people that follow the funds may have a different opinion because some of the technicals like in March corn really didn't perform like you wanted. Some of the contacts we had up at the board were wanting to go long in March corn on Friday morning, but by half the day into the market, they saw beans weren't really going anywhere, wheat wouldn't go anywhere, and they actually liquidated their longs with the idea that maybe March had done what it can do for now. And so it may be a little bit more negative than the start of the week, but overall, it seems like we got a real nice week behind us. We'd like to see it build upon that, Todd, but we also realize we're coming into the holidays, and it's going to be a lot harder to gauge whether, volume is going to be there and extra special volatility with the shortened trading week. That might give us some zigs and zags that we're going to have to figure out.
Grains finished this December the 16th Friday trade like this. The March contract in the oats for the week. The week-to-week trades down 26 cents for the March oats at $1.84. The wheat March contract at 326 and three quarters high. The low at $2.93. And the March taking the lead option now at 319 and three quarters. They were up 26 and three quarters from December's settlement last Friday. And the July wheat up 11 and three quarters at 338. March corn, the new lead option following the expiration of the December contract this week, had a high of 208 and three quarters on the weekly trade. That includes December's contract, and a low at 189 and three quarters. That's where that came from. And it's settled at 207 and a half, up 17 and three quarters from the December contract settlement last Friday. July corn, $2.25 and a quarter cents, finished 4 cents higher for the week. In his weekly Outlook newsletter, U of I Ag Extension economist Darrell Good says the cash market for next fall's corn had been trading near $2.40 a bushel, and that expectations are building that weather could be a bigger factor in next year's corn crop. Let's ignore the weather because it's simply unpredictable at this time. Is $2.40 a good place to market a portion of next year's corn crop? We'll start with you, Mike.
We don't think so at this time. And in fact, we looked at $2.38 when we went back down in that area as a second chance to get some longs in place and try and ask the market to give us a 20-cent pop here. And maybe get led by the wheat, maybe have the beans help us, maybe help the index funds help us. But if the timing aspect of this market and the seasonality of this market plays out similar to last year, and that's a big if, then we should be able to get the Deese corn to move. One of the most encouraging things about this week was the fact that Nove beans cleared 625, and that should help us, you know, and keep the acres preserved and push Deese corn up, we would think. But we didn't like the way the March closed, you know, from our opening comments. That was probably pretty obvious. But we also are very nervous about where the end of the year, first of the next year, cash flow selling needs of corn might, you know, what that might happen and whether it happens and if it does, whether that really pushes the Deese down and we go through a short-term lull in the market and maybe sideways market. But overall, we're not sellers of new crop corn here.
Dan, how about from the agrivisor side?
Well, I think we got a little time here. I've kind of always been kind of an advocate that, you know, 250 is always kind of a spot to do something at. We're not there. We did climb up to 46 here this week. But I think there's a little time, but I also recognize that, you know, with the 2.4, 2.5 billion bushel carryout down the road here, that we can withstand a couple million acre drop in corn acres and not really change the balance sheet much. So it's still going to be, I think, a weather market if we're going to go substantially above the 250 area.
Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services with us today for the Commodity Week program as well. Paul, we're discussing cash grain market and sales for next year in corn. And Darrell Good's comments in this week's Weekly Outlook looking at possibly 240 as a cash price. Darrell didn't say to sell there, but he said you could trade at that point. Would you make sales for cash corn at that area?
You know, Todd, we think that, you know, definitely the whisper in the countryside is some smaller corn acreage. We know this for a couple of reasons, but the main factor, of course, is the input costs. Our general impression is that we are going to see that million and a half, 2 million acre reduction. Our general philosophic nature here, it's awful cheap flat price, and we'd rather be a little conservative here. The rationale is that when you get those on the other side, the beans a little higher, that's probably a better commodity to play with at this time.
Dan, I want to talk about cycle analysis just a bit. Tell me about your cycle analysis. Specifically, I want to know if you think last summer's highs were high enough or if you're still tracing out something in the form of a much stronger rally for corn and maybe even for beans.
Well, I guess I have to know a little bit more what you mean by high enough. For several years, I don't think so. I do think it was high enough for maybe upwards of 10 to 12 months. You know, I do think that the corn market is in a situation when you look at raw supply-demand fundamentals and the type of inventory that we have around here, it may be difficult to warrant a big up in the corn market until we kind of get down the roads. I think it kind of tells us that the 2006 crop's going to have to get threatened before we can go on up. But I do have a pretty good opening in the corn market to actually all of my work does say that sometime from spring forward, there could be an opening here for a pretty good run to the upside.
And the obvious question there is your what fundamental reason happens? Weather is one of those, or there's other things that you're working with?
Well, if you're going to just do a raw cyclical analysis and raw data work when you try to look for the way the market performs over a period of time, whether that's a 5-year period or 10-year period, you really don't want to use fundamentals. But as a farmer analyst, so to speak, where I do give advice to farmers, you have to take that cyclical approach, and then you have to try to weave some fundamental reasoning in that to kind of paint a picture to see how something like that can unfold.
Okay. Let's talk about the bean market just a bit, and we'll start with you, Paul. I take that back. I want to ask one more question about the corn before we move on to the beans. Cash sales for corn now. Anybody still wanting to do that, Paul?
Well, you know, I think that the big thing here in the corn market is we have a tremendous carry. And we do need to, anytime a farmer does need to make sales in here, he does have to look forward and lock in deferred sales because the carry is a good part of the equation. Our general impression is that the corn trend is higher at the present time, and a person does have to push the sales. Unfortunately, we still are very cheap flat price, and at some point in time, a farmer does have to become fairly aggressive in moving some springtime corn.
You're talking about 2005, Todd? Yeah, we're in a mindset that you need to reward the rallies because at this time of the year, like Paul's talking about, with the carryover level being what it's at, that's pretty likely commercials are wide in basis if the futures goes up and rallies. So you don't want to overstay your welcome. And I'd say that especially since the weekly chart and the way the March closed. It tested, I think, the 50-day moving average 4 out of the last 5 days and just couldn't get back up above it. That's a key indicator to us that, you know, we need to get a close above that if we're going to get any more friendly this market than we are right now.
So you'd make cash sales?
on rallies, we'd reward it because it's most likely that the futures, if it goes up, they'll widen the basis and your net selling price is going to be tough. You really got to watch your basis here, and you might want to start locking that in ahead, you know, in anticipation of the futures going up.
Well, yeah, I think this 212 area or 210 area, I guess, on the March corn, it looks like it could be the topish end of maybe a winter sideways type trading range. I don't think it's in stone yet. I think the way the market performed here this past week, there's a shot at going up, blowing through that 210 area, maybe creeping on up into this 215, 218 area. So I guess I would be in position to see if this market can follow through to the upside this next week here or so and maybe push up into those levels. You know, those are going to warrant some sales. Kind of pick your delivery period. You know, if you got storage, you can go for the distant, maybe pick up a little carry. If not, you know, you have to go for the more of the front end month.
Taking a look now at the bean market for the week. The January had a high of $6 even, the low at 568 and three quarters. Soybeans settled 23 and one quarter higher from last Friday's settlement price at $5.92 and a quarter. And the July contract at 618 was up 28 cents from last week. On the bean market, we've talked on and off, Paul, about the index funds and how they can drive the market. Why is it that index funds are always buyers and or liquidators, but never actual sellers?
Well, I think they sell when they liquidate their contract and roll their contracts forward. You know, we were at a meeting with a WILL meeting here a couple of weeks ago, and the index funds have done well this year, Todd. They put money in their pocket. They've made investors money this year, and that's part of the equation of any good commodity industry. Our general impression is why are they always long? And, of course, the word inflation and costs, and they've basically have done some pretty good studies, is that in this inflationary environment, commodities are higher-priced items. My general opinion is that the three things that have made it successful, of course, is crude oil and some of the metals and also some of their currencies. So as a result of it, the grains have been a little bit behind times, and their cattle trades have also been good to excellent.
Paul, Informa this week put out a bean number for next year that shows potential to increase acreage and a 3 billion bushel crop. I know it's early, but let's speculate anyway. Tell me about soybean acreage and where the changes could be expected for the coming year.
You know, we hear the word, we're talking to our Iowa friends, they always use the word more corn, but they always worry about a spring, wet spring. But where the acreage is going to come from is generally the irrigated areas of the West, the Kansas, and anywhere you have a big center pivot and have to pump water a pretty high level. The costs just escalate unbelievably. The other thing that we're finding in our surveys in the state here, let's just say a typical farmer in McLean County farming 1,500 to 2,500 acres, he owns 240 acres, he's definitely going to switch some of those owned acres back to soybeans. That's our general opinion is, and he's probably still going on the cash rent ground, be heavy there. But from Mattoon, Terre Haute, Indianapolis south, we are definitely going to see more acres of soybeans in the south half of the growing state.
Interesting. Do you think that he's right that central Illinois farmers are going to put more of their own owned acres into soybeans? And then the southern Illinois thing is maybe a little bit easier, but I was surprised by the numbers you're coming up with out of Bloomington.
Well, I don't know if I have a good read on that. I do. My read is the farmers that are farming this black, good soil, high-end yields are probably not going to change much from their rotation. I think the changes, though, are going to occur in your less productive soils, the lower half of Illinois once you get into, and then you get into Missouri, you get into the fringes, as Paul mentioned, you get into your irrigated lands. I think there's where you're going to see the shift. And, of course, a lot of that shift a lot of that's going to depend upon number one, spring weather pattern, I think, is 90% of all this. I mean, I think we can talk about it before spring, which direction we're going to plant. But spring weather pattern probably has more to dictate about acres than anything. And then what's the cost of nitrogen when we come out of the winter? I think that is going to be a real key. But I do think that in the fringe areas, they're flexible. They're looking at going toward more beans. But under the right environment, they may keep some of those acres. But the soft red winter wheat acreage expansion tells you that we've lost corn acres, at least in the lower belt.
Let's move on to the cattle very quickly. Actually, well, Mike, I do want to know, what's your outlook for beans first before we do the cattle and the livestock?
Well, we're hopeful that the January can keep us up, but we're hedging new crop right now. We think that 625 is a good level to sell. We've got 1.5 times the carryover we had last year at this time, and we're 65 cents higher in November beans versus Novo 5. So we think this is a good place to start selling.
Everybody agree with that? Good place to sell? Paul?
You know, and I'm not too sure that we always like that business as a commodity broker, but I'd probably let the elevator meet the margin call, and we can always buy bull call spreads to cheapen the risk up for the producer. A lot of people are also waiting for that kind of a rally in their seed sales, but the seed companies aren't taking those kind of risks yet. So it's an interesting deal, and definitely it bears watching.
Mercantile exchange numbers for the week. Live cattle December contract 95.60 on the high, the low at 92.05. December live cattle settled 95.52.5. They were up $3.60 from last week. January feeder cattle 114.32.5, up 55 from last week. And lean hogs, the February contact, the new lead option there, 65.80 the high, the low at 62.10. And the Feb lean hogs settled at 64.32.5. They were up 77.5 from last week. February bellies finished the week at 83.97.5. The first shipments of beef made it to Japan this week. Will it make a difference in the marketplace?
Well, the trade seems to think so. I think everybody's kind of taken a wait-and-see attitude, though, to see how that Japanese consumer responds to American beef. There's been a general belief that maybe they may be reluctant to buy U.S. beef and still stay mostly with your Australian beef. But anytime you open up a market, you begin to put U.S. beef back on the shelves anyway in the Japanese grocery stores, that's going to be generally positive.
Mrs. Cooley and Mrs. Zuzulo will give beef for Christmas to the right people.
When we return, we'll talk with Brian Hoops of Midwest Market Solutions.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Winter weather continued without much of a break this week across Illinois. Although temperatures did moderate toward the middle and end of the week, overall average temperatures were below normal across much of the state. There was a strong west-to-east gradient, with temperatures near normal in western Illinois and 5 to 6 degrees below normal across the eastern half. For the first half of December, temperatures are running 10 to 12 degrees below normal across the entire state. We had a mixed bag of precipitation across the state this week, with snow in the north and central sections, some snow, freezing rain in Sleet Central, and rain in the south. Although precipitation was fairly widespread over the week, it was generally light. Snow covers the ground over the northeastern half of Illinois, but was as far south as the Ohio River until the warmer weather this week. The week before Christmas will start out cold, but there are indications that the weather will moderate late in the week. With warmer temperatures and some sunshine, prospects for a white Christmas could be dim for all but far northern Illinois if the forecast pans out. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu. Click on AM and then on Agriculture.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Mike Zuzulo, Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Our guest today is Brian Hoops of the Midwest Market Solutions in Yankton, South Dakota. Brian specializes in grains and oilseeds analysis and works closely with the Kansas City Board of Trade and exploring hard red winter wheat. Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Tell me how you view the recent action at the Kansas City Board of Trade and its play into the Chicago markets.
Well, we've seen a tremendous amount of spreading between the Kansas City and Chicago markets. So the traders, I think, are looking at the fundamental balance sheets and the export pace of the hard wheat, especially the Kansas City hard red winter wheat. And we're sharply ahead of where we were at this point last year. In fact, we're up in the 70 percentile as far as the overall forecast of the USDA. With that strong export pace, combined with the slow pace of the soft, we've seen a tremendous amount of spreading. I was down on the floor about a month ago now, and traders were talking about that, and that's pretty much what they were focusing on at that point was the intermarket type spreads where they wanted to buy a Kansas City and sell a Chicago leg against it.
Brian, when it's all said and done, what's the farmer going to do? Is he going to err by planting more oil seeds in the Dakotas, or how's he? What kind of a card game is he going to play out there in the springtime?
Yeah, I listen to you guys talk about the acres and what direction they're going to go. I get the feeling from talking with clients in this area, you know, they're fairly comfortable with the rotations. The corn has been producing very well for them as they've had decent rainfall the last couple of years. They're also very happy with their wheat rotation, and so a lot of producers have gone to a mixture, a three-crop rotation, where they've either planted some oats or wheat along with the corn and soybeans, and they're not apt to change that significantly. So I don't think you'll see a lot of a shift in acres over this last year from corn, soybeans, wheat, and oats. All those markets will probably just remain very steady in this part of the country.
Is that your take then on the hard red winter wheat acreages as you get down in the lower plains, Kansas and Oklahoma, and on into Texas? You don't think you're going to see any drop in wheat acres in those areas?
I think in those areas, I think Sparks actually thought we'd see maybe 1.5 million more winter wheat acres being planted. And I think you're probably going to see a trend along those lines. I think I don't remember who made the comment, but I agree with the comment that was made that if you're a producer that needs to irrigate, whether you're in Nebraska or Kansas or Oklahoma, and you're irrigating corn, the cost and expense of doing that is going to be increased. It's been dry in many of those areas, so there's no subsoil moisture to fall back upon. You're very likely to shift into more of a wheat or maybe even a soybean acre as opposed to going with the corn rotation that you've been using.
Brian, are you hedging any new crop in any of the three complexes, corn, beans, or wheat?
We've been doing quite a bit of winter wheat hedging this fall. We found good price levels, good opportunities in that September and October time frame. And this week, as someone else had mentioned, we found November beans to be an attractive hedge as well, up above 620 and then hitting a high of 630 here on Friday. Very good opportunities, I believe, to at least start getting into some new crop hedges. The corn, I think, is one that has not given us that opportunity yet, similar to last year where we had a very narrow window of marketing in that corn where we finally peaked in the spring time frame and had a six-week or so run of prices that gave us that opportunity. Corn is not doing that yet. I do not view this 238 to 245 December corn trading range that we're at as a good hedging or sale opportunity. I would certainly look to 255 or above before I would begin doing any type of a hedging in the corn.
From the soy complex, it seems that the market has either decided to ignore or simply there's just not enough fresh news out of South America to really talk about that crop. What do you hear from there?
Well, here in South American acres, specifically the Brazilian acres, down this year over 6%. The loss of acres has not really affected production. We're still expecting production to be higher than last year. I think the estimate I saw today was around 58 versus the 51 they grew last year. That is assuming a normal weather pattern. We've had one stretch here now where dry weather has maybe sparked some interest from some fund buying, a little short covering, or at least that was an excuse this week to rally. And you could get that talk through the winter, but this certainly in December is not a good key growing time frame, so you're not likely to see a major rally. But if this would happen in the February time frame, you'll likely see a dollar or more being put onto these soybeans if you do hurt the crop. Right now they're factoring in and have done so a pretty sizable increase in production, even though the acres will be down. But right now we're too early to look at the overall weather as being a major factor.
Brian, would you share with us the price of land out in South Dakota, and what's the farmer thinking about his next step as far as investments?
The price of land for many years was probably undervalued given the rest of the country, and as farmland has gotten more expensive in states like Iowa or Illinois or even Nebraska, producers have found that conditions, if given good conditions, you can grow a tremendous crop here in Iowa, especially or in South Dakota, especially in eastern South Dakota, and so land values are starting to creep up. The price of land from 10 years ago that was selling for $300 to $500 an acre is now $2,000 an acre farmland. And yields have come up to where to the point where 60, 70 bushel corn 10, 15 years ago is now 200 bushel corn. And that is a big change because of weather, irrigation practices, and also because of the genetics and seed on the corn part of it.
Brian, we thank you for joining us today.
All right. Thank you very much, Todd.
Brian Hoops is with Midwest Market Solutions out of Yankton, South Dakota. Now, a final word from our panelist, Paul Cooley.
Anyway, I think you cut through what Brian said is smaller corn acreage in the West.
And Dan Zwicker?
Just to say that I think a lot of the strength here that we saw here in December is kind of a counter reaction to an extreme bearish November, and one needs to kind of watch for some selling opportunities if you need to get something done here.
And Mike Zuzalo.
One of the reasons we're hedging that new crop, Todd, and the beans is because if we're wrong and beans go higher in the November, we think we'll make that up with our new crop corn longs, and the Dease corn price will have to go up with the Nov beans just to keep the acreage right.
We'd like to thank our panelists, Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, and Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can access this Commodity Week program and analysis throughout the week right there on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is WILL.UIUC.EDU. Just click on AM. And then agriculture. There you'll find Commodity Week, weekly analysis, cash grain reports, weather, and feature interviews with agricultural newsmakers. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.